Our next speaker is Matthew Matumba, who's going to talk about psychosocial challenges and strategies coping with HIV infection among in-school perinatally infected adolescents in Uganda. She is currently a PhD candidate in the health behavior and health education at the University of Michigan School of Public Health, and for the past 7 years, she's conducted health-related research on health-related challenges among HIV-infected children and adolescents in Uganda. Her scientific interests include adherence to HIV care, mental and sexual reproductive health, and well-being of HIV-infected adolescents. She's interested in research to understand and develop interventions to address the needs of this population. Masi?
All right, thank you. So my name is Masi Mutumba, and I'm here to talk to you about the psychosocial challenges and coping strategies of adolescents who are living with HIV/AIDS in Uganda. I do not have any personal relationship to disclose at this time. So my presentation is going to cover the background, methods, results, discussion, and offer some way forward on what I think are the issues that are going to be highlighted. So just to give you some bit of background, antiretroviral therapy has prolonged and improved the quality of life of people who are living with HIV/AIDS worldwide. And we see this include in all places, including sub-Saharan Africa, where 90% of children who are born with HIV are actually living. In Uganda, we have about 150,000 children who are living with HIV, and these are children below the age of 15 years. But for children who have been born with HIV, it's a chronic illness now. We kind of think about it differently. They face a double burden in the sense that they have to deal with adolescence, which we know to be a very tumultuous period of time for any child. But also, they have to live with an illness which is chronic and very stigmatized in any community. So for these children, their health and well-being really depends on how well they are able to cope with these challenges that are going to be varied, as I'm going to highlight. So in this study, it's informed by the Lazarus and Folkman theory of coping. And in here, we define coping as a dynamic process that entails deployment of cognitive and behavioral efforts to manage specific internal and external demands that have been appraised as stressful. So just to say that if someone perceives something as a stress, they have to employ some kind of process and behavior, some efforts which are on the part of the individual to handle these stressors, and then the outcome will depend on how well they employ these particular strategies they have chosen. So according to this theory, the stress and coping theory, coping is necessary. It's viewed more as a moderator in the relationship between stress and well-being. So the objective of this study was to identify the psychosocial challenges of adolescents who are living with HIV/AIDS, but also identify what strategies they use to cope. So from the public health perspective, or for someone like myself who is really interested in developing interventions, it was important to identify what opportunities for interventions exist as we think of how well can we improve the well-being of adolescents who are living with HIV/AIDS. So the study was conducted at a large HIV treatment center in Kampala. And using an in-depth, a purposive sample of 38 adolescents, they were selected to represent the diversity in age and gender of the population. We conducted in-depth semi-structured interviews with these adolescents, 20 females and 18 males, aged 12 to 19 years old. And this data was, of course, transcribed and analyzed thematically to identify what the stressors and coping strategies. So moving on to results. I'll first read this quote. At first, when I took those medications, I was in boarding school. I was coughing all the time, and the children were laughing at me, and I felt bad. I don't know how the matron got to know, but she knew, and she told them. They backbited me wherever I passed. So I use this quote to illustrate the primary challenge of adolescents living with HIV/AIDS, and that is stigma. 20 years plus into the epidemic, stigma is still pervasive. Uganda was one of the first countries to have HIV in sub-Saharan Africa, and at this point in time, we still have the issue of stigma. And for adolescents who are living with HIV/AIDS, they have to struggle with this in every aspect of their lives. Now, stigma happens in school, as illustrated in this quote, but it also happens at home. So in school, children are subjected to backbiting, or which is gossiping, this is using their term, but also there's a lot of teasing, both from peers, but also teachers do participate in this teasing. They single out students based on their HIV status. And in the homes, despite years of education about HIV, we still have some children reporting having their utensils separated from other children. They are segregated and given different treatment, even from their siblings who may be living in the same home if they are HIV negative. And in this case, they report being sent to inferior schools and not receiving the same level of facilitation as their siblings. There's also a refusal, for example, to play with their siblings if they are HIV infected, with the fear that they might actually pass on the infection to other children in the home. Now, closely related to this, given adolescents' fear and actual experiences with stigma and discrimination, they are really consumed with their fear of unintentional disclosure. And issues like taking drugs, for example, associating with other children who have HIV, or talking about HIV would be some of those things that could actually have their status questioned sometimes. So they really have a strong fear for this. And as we see from this quote, we see that adolescents are willing to sacrifice their treatment to protect their status. And this has grave implications for their well-being, because if they don't adhere to their medications, then they're going to get resistance to their medications. Another issue that we found was it's very difficult for adolescents to disclose. And a number of reports, just from this quote, it's very hard for them to disclose their HIV status to their peers, because this is a stigmatizing disease. And even if one would think that, well, I got it from my parents, it doesn't change the fact that they have HIV and they will be stigmatized. So for them, it's very hard to disclose to their peers, their boyfriends and their girlfriends. And that is one challenge that came up for them. As you can see from this quote, disclosure has various implications. We know that for adolescents, peer relationships are really important, and any disclosure of their HIV status could potentially result in loss of these relationships. Another thing that we found was the secrecy in homes. There's a lack of disclosure. It's easy to imagine that because these children have been born with HIV, that every member of the family actually is aware of their status, and this is actually not the case. We found that lots of adolescents actually reported parents or one parent requesting them to keep their status, either from siblings as a way of trying to protect them, or from other family members. Now, I can't speak to the motivations of the parents because this study did not interview the parents, but we know that there's concern that if a child's status is disclosed, they may actually face discrimination either within the home or within the greater community. So it may be motivated by a desire to protect their children, but also by the desire sometimes for the parent not to have their own HIV status disclosed if they haven't disclosed to their partner. Now, what we see from this secrecy as a challenge is that the children are not able to seek social support from within their family members, where one would expect this is the unit that is going to really support them, especially in terms of adherence. But also this secrecy kind of reinforces adolescents' sense of isolation, because they're already feeling different, and by actually asking them to keep this and the burden that they're imposing on them, it really makes them feel more isolated within these homes. Medication adherence, as expected, was a challenge for adolescents. Beyond the side effects of the medications, we found that the challenges that adolescents faced really varied with the type of school they attend. And in Uganda, you can either attend a day school or you could attend a boarding school. So for day school attending adolescents, most of their challenges were really related to their own routine. For example, I wake up late and yet I have to prepare for school, so I forget. I come back late from school, or sometimes I go off somewhere and I forget to pack the medications. And as you can see, for this adolescent, they really feel very strongly about their medication. So these were the challenges for the day school attending adolescents. But for adolescents who are attending boarding school, we found that, one, the stigma and discrimination whether perceived or enacted, was actually one of the biggest threats for them, as we saw from the first court. And for these adolescents, it was really because they were trying very much to conceal their status, that it was very difficult for them to take medications, especially in the context of Uganda, where you live in very crowded dormitories. We're talking about rooms that have more than 30 children living in close proximity to each other. So there's really no privacy for them to take their medications. But also the school routines and structures really impose huge barriers to these adolescents in terms of adherence. Because if you have to wake up and leave your dormitories by 6 a.m., your medication schedule may not really coincide with the time you have to leave. And if you're not really having developed those planning skills to pack your medications, then you might not be able to have the drugs at the time you need to take them. We also found that a number of adolescents do actually keep their medications with a school nurse, one as a way of trying to maintain some bit of privacy. So, and conceal their identity. But this is not also fail-proof, because if the clinics are locked, we're not talking about 24-hour clinics sometimes, they may not be able to access these medications. So that is a challenge for these young people. Relationship concerns, which is one we'd expect among adolescents, were also raised as a challenge. And these were related to transmission concerns. As we can see from this quote, adolescents are really concerned about transmitting the virus to their sexual partners. So we can't ignore the fact that adolescents are, even with HIV, are sexually active. But beyond this is also the issue of how to disclose to their sexual partners about their HIV status, because as we've already seen, there are challenges about, they are concerned about the issue of losing these relationships, which they value quite a lot. So other challenges we found was the burden of HIV infection, the adolescents' perceptions of how being HIV infected would actually affect their future aspirations. Now, we asked them about what they aspire to be, and a lot of them actually want to pursue professional careers, and they didn't think in that arena being HIV positive would actually affect their ability to become a doctor or to become a lawyer. But they raised issue about the ability to get married and to have children, which in our culture is a huge concern, because being, for example, having a child is really, really connected to your sense of womanhood. There's also some bit of difficulty accepting HIV status. We found that there's quite a lot of delayed disclosure. The average age at disclosure is more than 13 years old. So we're really looking at a population that has recently just learned of their HIV status in most cases, and they're still really trying to come to grasp that and integrate that into their own identity. And there are also financial worries for these adolescents. So how do they cope with these challenges? Treatment optimism was one of the strange strategies they used. A lot of adolescents believe in the medications, and this is what gives them hope. It also helps them mitigate some of the external side effects. For example, if you take your medications, then you don't fall sick frequently, you don't get the external signs of HIV, so you're able to conceal your identity in that way. Avoidance and distraction were also commonly used among adolescents. Issues like reading books, working hard, hanging out with friends, watching TV, but also found that for adolescents, even at this young age, they were able to reflect that this using avoidance and distraction as a coping strategy is not very effective. As we can see from this last quote, you can try to forget, but it's very difficult to forget that you have HIV because you're frequently reminded. The drugs remind you of this. Now, social support was really key to adolescents. This was from family members, but also from friends. A few who could manage to disclose to friends actually got support from them. We also found that healthcare providers do actually provide a good network of social support for adolescents who are living with HIV/AIDS. Identity management in the form of non-disclosure of HIV status, or limited disclosure to a few very trusted friends, and also asking sometimes parents not to call to reveal your HIV status to school authorities was one of the avenues or strategies that were used. Another one was actually kind of like attributing your illness to another disease, a more socially accepted illness, for example, heart disease or anything, cancer, but not HIV, because those are more socially acceptable. We found evidence of religiosity. For example, the adolescents talked about a great trust in God, but as you can see from this, you trust God, but you also take the medication. It goes both ways. Information seeking was also another strategy that was used, and in this case we found that adolescents frequently inquire about their CD4 counts and viral loads as a way of self-monitoring to know how much progress or where their health status stands, but also learning more about HIV to inform their decision-making regarding various health decisions that they have. Now, other coping strategies that we found included acceptance, I'm not the first and last person to have HIV, rationalization. Everyone can get HIV, and being HIV positive doesn't mean that you'll die if you have the drugs. We also found social comparison, like you compare yourself to other people who are living with HIV and see those who are not infected also, and resignation. Now, in terms of adherence, because we're very interested in how do adolescents adhere, especially if they're in boarding school, we found that they've used phones. Even when phones are not allowed in schools, they still sneak in phones and keep alarms and get reminders from their friends and families. Keeping medications at the school clinic, as well as getting rest permits from the school warden. So this is kind of like a decoy. You say you're going to rest, but when you go to your dormitory, you're able to take your medications in privacy because other students may be in class or elsewhere. And also limited disclosure. So these findings actually do point to the various challenges that adolescents face, and these are related to both their HIV status, but by the nature of their unique developmental stage. The challenges cut across different contexts. They're both in the home settings and they're both in the school settings. And the coping skills that are employed to deal with these strategies are very specific to the challenge, but not to the context. So as a way forward, I think these findings highlight potential opportunities for targeted interventions, especially to address the stigma and discrimination within schools. And there's also a need to promote dialogue and on disclosure, but also some kind of talk about HIV within homes, especially as a way of harnessing social support for adolescents. And there's also opportunity for life skills trainings. So these findings are not conclusive. It's a very small sample, and there's still opportunity for us to explore more to understand coping and the challenges adolescents face, and also to quantify more of what the implications of these challenges are for adolescents' health and well-being. So thank you very much.